Good evening. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. It's 6 p.m. on Thursday, September 18th. And I'm News Director Catherine Rose, broadcasting live tonight from the Cable House. Earlier this week, on Tuesday and Wednesday, we hosted forums with candidates running for seats on the Sitka Assembly and the School Board, respectively. And tonight, we're discussing two ballot propositions that will go before voters in the October 7th municipal election. So first off, here with me tonight in the studio is Chris McGraw, one of the sponsors of Ballot Prop 2. Chris, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, this is your chance to ask Chris your questions. So if you have a question about Ballot Proposition 2, you can call us at 747-5879 or email news@kcaw.org. And reporter Ryan Cotter is here to take your call right now. So Chris, let's get started with a little bit of background and step back before Ballot Prop 2, just to give folks some context for kind of where it came from. So it was, you know, one of the responses to a citizen initiative that was considered in a special election in May that sought to limit cruise traffic in Sitka. So can you talk a little bit about the formation of Safeguard Sitka's Future and its response to the first initiative?
Sure. I was one of the founding members of Safeguard Sitka's Future, which was kind of an ad hoc group of local business owners and community members back in, I guess it was 2023. And our purpose was really to educate community members on the benefits of, you know, primarily cruise tourism and how it provided economic means for a lot of working families and promoted various aspects of the community. And then when Ballot Prop 1 came to be, we kind of came out against Ballot Prop 1, noting the impacts it had with the community and the drastic cut to cruise tourism and the effects that would have that would ripple through the community. And during that process, I had never really been involved in a ballot prop or citizens initiative process. So I got to learn a lot about the process and how it works. And through that process, I kind of came to the realization that I felt there was a gap. And, you know, we're really a representative democracy. So we elect officials, primarily those elected officials, pass laws, you know, vote on bills. And in that process, they have committees, they do research, and they make informed decisions. So they have economic information, they have environmental information on the decisions they're making. And with a citizen initiative, there really is no basis for providing factual information. So that's where this Ballot Prop 2 came from, is we felt that there needed to be an independent study done on the impacts of citizens' initiatives that would be submitted with the application to the City and Borough of Sitka, so that voters, when they're evaluating whether they want to vote yes or no on a citizens' initiative, they have informed information and can make an informed decision.
And that was a lot of work that your group did, you know, with Ballot Prop 1, the first Ballot Prop 1 back in May, not the one we're going to be talking about later tonight, was doing a lot of that research, right, that economic research, and then providing information to the public. Can you talk a little bit about that process? Was it, you know, a lengthy, difficult, expensive process to gather that info?
Most of it was done by, you know, members of Safeguard Sitka, and, you know, was going through city budgets and trying to pull line items and making a lot of assumptions. You know, we'd look at sales tax data, historical sales tax data during COVID when there were no cruise ships, and then try to extrapolate what was inflation and then come up with a value in today's dollars. So, you know, they weren't hard black and white numbers. They were the best assumptions we could make at the time. And, you know, I think on the opposite side, you know, they did, the Vote Yes group made similar assumptions. And for the general public, it's, you know, what is the truth? What is factual? What isn't? And, you know, none of it, I think, was exact, and none of it was independent. You know, in an election, you know, each side is going to try to come up with their own information that plays to their advantage. And this prop would require an independent economic impact study that would be done by a third party, so it, you know, would be neutral.
Can you walk me through some of the language in ballot prop 2? What's it asking voters to consider beyond that sort of initial line? What are some of the stipulations around this economic study?
So the economic study would have to be submitted with an application. So if somebody wants to do a citizen initiative before they even submit their initial application to the city, they would have to have that economic impact study done. And then it would have to touch on a couple of different points. The first one would be fiscal impact to the city and borough of Sitka. So if an initiative creates, you know, enforcement actions, the city has to create new departments. What are the costs associated with that? It would have to come up with a revenue analysis. You know, is it going to affect sales tax? You know, there could be a ballot initiative that could increase sales tax or could decrease sales tax. So it would have to come up with that information as well. They'd have to come up with information on job loss, both public and private sector job loss or job gains, depending on the initiative. And then they would have to come up with this information and give it on 1 year, 5 year, and 10 year increments. So the impacts, you know, for those varying durations of time.
And it requires what does it require as far as who can write the study?
So we have qualifications in here that would require it to be an independent third party that has experience in doing this type of economic impact studies in Southeast Alaska.
So, and they need to have an advanced degree. They need to have some kind of economics experience, right?
They do. So the person has to have a master's degree in economics, and they have to have, find the exact number here, but I think it's, professional experience conducting economic impact studies related to Southeast Alaska.
And then thinking about the citizen initiative process, we've seen several citizen initiative attempts recently before Prop 1 made it across City Hall into the voters, right? But generally they're not all that common. So why is changing the process now important?
Well, I think as our economy becomes more dependent on tourism and fewer stools holding that up, I think there's going to be more and more instances where people are going to want to restrict certain aspects of the economy. You know, for instance, in Juneau right now, I think they have 3 citizens initiatives that are on the ballot. You know, as you look at affordability, I know in Juneau they have one that's related to no sales tax on, I think it's groceries. You know, if you look at that from this economic impact standpoint, I mean, I think everybody would say, yay, we don't want sales tax on groceries. But to the other side, what does that do to city sales tax? And if you cut city sales tax by millions of dollars, what does that affect? You know, what programs are we going to lose? So I think a voter having that information before they just decide, yeah, I don't want sales tax on groceries, is an important aspect.
And when it comes to this ballot proposition, if voters approve ballot Prop 1, it would require the sponsors to fund this impact study. And I think that's kind of a sticking point for some people about it. So some Sitkans want to know what the economic impact the initiative would have, what economic impact the initiative would have on them, i.e. how much it would cost an individual to fund one of these, say if an individual wants to sponsor a citizen initiative. Have you done any research into that? Is there a rough, it's a hard number to find. I've been kind of trying to look for it myself, and I've had some difficulty trying to figure out what the range might be.
It all depends on the initiative. If it's a super complex initiative that touches, you know, city government, creates departments, touches private industry, it could be expensive. But let's say we want to do a citizen initiative to do no plastic bags in town. That would be pretty simple. You know, I don't think you'd have a real expensive economic impact study to do a citizen initiative such as that, or even this no sales tax. That would be, you know, fairly straightforward. I'm sure that data could be found and be completed pretty inexpensively. So you can't put an exact number on it. Pretty much the more complex your initiative is, most likely the more expensive an economic impact study would be.
Thanks for that answer. And I'm going to pivot to listener questions now. Just wanted to get into the background of the initiative first a little bit. And just so you know, if you're listening, I'm talking to Chris McGraw about Ballot Proposition 2. You can call 747-5879 if you have questions, or you can email news@kcaw.org. And our reporter, Ryan Cotter, will be feeding those questions to me in the air room as I'm speaking with Chris. This first question comes from Brandy. And this is, I got a few versions of this question. It's the one that came up the most often from listeners. And Brandy wants to know, you know, how do you respond to the charge that Ballot Prop 2 would price democracy out of the hands of ordinary citizens? What's your response to that?
Well, to me, democracy in the United States, our system is set up through a representative democracy. Citizens initiatives are only in about half of the states in the United States. And this does not limit somebody's ability to do a citizen's initiative or the fact that people vote on citizen initiative. The democracy part is people voting. And everybody still gets a voice. Everybody can make a decision. It's just they're going to make a more informed decision with this information than they would before that.
And I have another listener question from Carrie. She wants to know, is the information in an economic impact study culled primarily from already available public information? So where's this information going to come from?
It depends on the initiative. I mean, from tourism, if it's tourism related, I think it would come from a mix of publicly available data. And then, firms that do these studies will often do surveys to businesses, to individuals, to gather that data. And sometimes they'll even, gather information from visitors, take surveys on how much did you spend while you're in a community, to gather all of that data. So it would depend on the initiative, and it comes from every source that they would need to fill that topic.
All right, this question is from Don. And he wants to know how many consultants in Alaska meet the qualifications outlined in the proposition.
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, it's definitely like, do they have to be from Southeast Alaska? Did you say that?
They have to have experience.
Okay.
In Southeast Alaska.
So you've got the McDowell Group, you've got Raincoast Data. There are a handful. I'm just curious. Let me see here. It sounds like we're getting some phone calls. I do have another question from a listener here. Can you provide some examples of problems with the initiative process from the past and explain how this initiative would resolve those problems?
Well, I think I touched on that earlier in that, with the ballot prop that came up last spring, there was disagreement. The primary disagreement between the two sides was what is the economic impact of the cut to cruise ship tourism. Mm-hmm. And Seoul had one side and one number, and Safeguard Sitka had a different number. And this would solve that issue.
All right, we're getting another question. I'm just waiting for that to come in here. Sounds like both of our reporters, Hope McKinney and Ryan Cotter, are on the phone right now answering your questions. Again, that's 747-5879, and or you can email news@kcaw.org. And this person says, I'm just going to give them another second to get that question written out for me. This question is from John. And he says, there's only been one citizen initiative since 2004. Why is it necessary to have a preemptive ballot like this?
Why is it? This isn't a preemptive. This is a result of, like I stated earlier, becoming familiar with the ballot initiative process. I feel there's a gap. And that gap is an information gap. Most laws at local, state, and federal levels are passed by legislators that have wealth of information. Citizens' initiatives, in general, people vote with very little information, and that information comes from, either the sponsor or the opposition. And this helps bridge that gap and provides transparency to the voters so that they understand the impacts of what they're voting on.
Is this is a clarifying question from me, is the, you get the summary. So if this passes, you get the summary, but then the public would have to do a FOIA, a public records request for the full document, correct? Or no? Did that change?
That's how it's written.
Okay.
Yeah, anybody could get the full version.
But they'd have to submit a request for the full version. Otherwise, it's a one-pager that would come with any citizen initiative in order to vote on it. That
Correct.
Would be what the voter would see at the ballot box.
Correct.
Gotcha. So, okay, here's a question from Bruce that's coming through. He says, the proposition, ballot proposition one back in May was defeated. He questions why this is needed, considering that history. He also wonders why just focus on economic research for this? Why not look at cultural or environmental impact, rather than the dollar amount?
I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, our group, you know, Safeguard Sitka's Future, our primary focus is the economic stability of the community and making sure that there's living wage jobs for young families. You know, the environmental impact, you know, if there's a new major development, environmental impact studies are required. And I do think that would probably be a good idea for citizens' initiatives. I mean, it's the same concept. You want to be an informed voter and understand what you're voting on. So whether there's an economic impact, a, you know, cultural impact, or environmental impact, I think those all are appropriate. And as a voter, I know as a voter myself, the more information I have, the better information I have, and the better I feel about a decision I can make to vote.
All right. 747-5879 or go online at kcaw.org, email news@kcaw.org to ask your questions. It looks like we're running low on listener questions, and I'm not hearing the phones ring. And we've got another ballot proposition forum coming up here shortly. Is there anything, Chris, that we haven't touched on about this initiative that you think folks should know?
The concept of having what I would call a fiscal note on a citizens initiative, so information on the initiative that shows the economic impact and the financial implications of it, isn't something that is new. Numerous states require this on state initiatives, and it's for that purpose of voters understanding what the impact is that they're voting on.
So there's precedent for this in other places.
There is precedent for this in other places.
All right. If we don't have any other listener questions, call in 747-5879. I have one more for you. So, you know, in closing, can you make your case? Why should Sitkins vote yes on ballot prop 2?
I think it's a matter of transparency and information. Ballot initiatives can have a serious effect on everybody's life if you don't know the full impact. So if a citizens initiative ends up decreasing sales tax by, you know, 20%, that affects schools, that affects city funding. It could raise utility rates. And all of those, that impacts everybody. So this being in place helps protect significant losses and all the citizens being affected so that you have the knowledge of what you're voting on before you vote. So if I know that it's likely that, you know, this is a citizens initiative is going to reduce sales tax by $5 million, and that's going to in turn cut, you know, parks and rec, school funding, can't fund schools to the cap. As a voter, I'm going to consider, okay, is that worth whatever the citizens initiative is seeking to accomplish?
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Chris.
Yep, thank you.
And you are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. And this has been a ballot forum for Proposition 2. I've been speaking with Chris McGraw, sponsor of Ballot Prop 2. And coming up next, Kevin Mosher and Chris Yusted will be in to talk about Ballot Prop 1. And Hope McKinney will be in with them. I'm going to play a little bit of music for you, and they'll be in just a few moments. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka.
Good evening. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. It is 6:22 on Thursday, September 18th. I'm reporter Hope McKenney, broadcasting from the Cable House. Tonight, we're discussing two ballot propositions that will go before voters in the October 7th municipal election. We just finished up a forum on Proposition 2 with News Director Catherine Rose. Here with me in the studio are Assembly Members Kevin Mosier and Chris Yestad, sponsors of Ballot Proposition 1. Listeners, this is your chance to ask our guests your questions. If you have a question, call us at 747-5879 or email news at kcaw.org. Reporter Ryan Cotter is here, ready to take your call. So to get started, in the upcoming municipal election, let me turn your mics up. In the upcoming municipal election, voters will consider a ballot initiative that would lift restrictions on a city hospital fund to pay for upgrades to local recreational and athletic facilities. You both sponsored Ballot Prop 1. Can you start by giving me some background on how this idea came about?
Yeah, I'll start with this, I guess. So the idea kind of first started percolating in my head when our previous finance director approached the assembly and said that this fund in the next few years was going to start to see a positive balance growing in it. Hard to say exactly how much it was, but it was how do we want to deal with this balance as we move forward? That ordinance, I believe it was to go to the general fund. The assembly voted it down at that time. So it kind of got me thinking of, well, what would be good uses for this fund? And kind of my time with my kids in sports and just being around a lot of our coaches around in Sitka, a lot of them have been working towards trying to turf their fields, whether it be a softball field, a track and field facility, a new track. And it was kind of like, wow, well, you know, this seems like a pretty appropriate use of these funds. The tobacco tax was voted on to promote general health and well-being in the community through our hospital. Obviously, the hospital's been sold and gone now, but another way of promoting health and well-being within the community is, you know, through potential athletic facilities or just recreation in general. So it kind of got me thinking more along those lines. I am the backup liaison to Parks and Rec, and Kevin's our primary liaison to Parks and Rec Committee. And so I approached him to see if he wanted to co-sponsor, and he was very excited. So yeah, if you have any more to add to that.
Thank you, Chris. I think you pretty much wrapped it up really well. When Chris approached me about it, I was very excited, as I am still now. I think, you know, we've been trying to kind of bring some of the big picture facts into play, and I won't get, I'm assuming we're going to get to housing and childcare questions after, but this is not going to be something where we're building something next year or even 2 years. This is something that the money was just sitting there. There's nothing we could do with it at all. I don't think that would be worth putting to the general fund, but there's some mechanics about the fund that basically makes it so right around now is when someone approached us and said that we have like $1 million and other things like that. And effectively we have money in there, but because the city, the fund has a loan from the general fund. So that has to be paid back. And when the funds from the sale of the community hospital are out of escrow, then we basically would be at a break-even point right now and then begin to build the fund. You know, it's irregular, it's not consistent. I'm guessing between $60,000 and $150,000 a year, which it's not enough to do major things. Allows us to do some maintenance on some things, but Chris and I had a vision of you know, we did say possibly building a new multi-purpose field, and that's still in the works, but several people approached us and helped us, you know, see that this could be used like in a model like Anchorage, where we possibly, when we're ready in a couple years from now, after we've done a master plan, we could possibly go to the voters to get a bond to pay for maybe the major overhaul of some of the old recreation and athletic facilities. We have a lot of them, and they need some help. So this is going to be a wide range of ability for us to use, and it will be we will be coming to the community when major decisions like what are we going to do with this money. This is going to be a community decision and a community outreach when we get to that point, which is still a while away.
Okay, and I think you touched on this, but I mean, is there already a vision for what these funds would go towards? So upgrading Sitka's current facilities or creating new ones?
I would say roughly yes. You know, there's already some groups organized that would like to see these funds used kind of towards a track and field facility, multi-purpose field facility. But that's definitely not hard-coded. You know, I think the next step is going to be creating a master plan and seeing what the community wants to see for updating our athletic and recreational facilities, whether that be a multi-field complex or go to any wide variety of things. It could be potentially just a revitalization of some of our trails that is really popular with the public, or stuff I was even contemplating was eventually, you know, Goddard's going to probably need the bathhouses redone. So, I mean, it could go to projects like that. So the community is just going to have to get together, put a lot of input into what we want to see and prioritize it. And that's what the master plan is for. So there are some rough ideas, but it's definitely not saying that that will be number one on the list. It may be a little bit further down. But there's still a long ways to go with this. This is strictly trying to find that funding source to be able to do these projects.
Okay. Anything else to add? No. Okay. And so city staff in past assembly meetings have expressed some uncertainty over how much surplus the fund will have and when it'll be available. I know, Kevin, you touched on this a minute ago, but why is that? Why is there so much uncertainty?
That's because it's kind of a complicated fund. The biggest reason being, you know, the money, the revenue that comes in is primarily from the tobacco tax, but also from the sale of the annual payment by Search to the Sitka Community Hospital Fund. I'm having a mind blank. I'm in the middle of this. What was your question?
I can kind of help you here, Kevin. So one of the things with that fund is it's going, right, currently paying off the hospital's liabilities. One of those biggest liabilities is the retirements of our hospital employees. So obviously that becomes kind of hard to say when people's are going to quit collecting their retirement money. So it makes that projection of those liabilities kind of hard to predict. So that's kind of the biggest problem with the fund not being real predictable, is this, you know, how fast are these liabilities going to come off the fund? You know, it's a guessing game, basically, yeah, at this point. But we're kind of hoping to start seeing, it was projected we'll start seeing a small balance incurring within the next couple of years. So, and how quickly it grows from there, we just don't know at this point. But that was kind of the idea with these recreational athletic facilities, is they can be patient. They do have some time. It's not an immediate need like childcare is or housing is. So to me, it felt like this was an appropriate use of that fund.
I was just going to, I just thought while we were talking, is that one of the other major parts of the uncertainty is that the PERS liability, we don't determine that. That is determined by the state annually. So we have no control or idea how much it's going to be from year to year. And that would maybe sound reckless, like, hey, if you don't even know, why bother? But this is basically like a little savings account. We're saving for a future. And something that I've been trying to emphasize, and we've both been trying to emphasize, is that in our minds, if this passes, hopefully by a wide margin, it shows that the community is invested in this. And so that makes it much easier to leverage that advantage to apply for state and federal grants and funds, as well as possibly looking at donations by, say, the Rasmussen Foundation. Whenever there's donations, there's always inquiry into the community buy-in. That's why I feel like it's really important there'd be a high turnout in the positive for this, because it may seem like a little bit right now, but when you think of those possibilities, it makes it a great possibility for more funding in the future.
Yeah, so this really is looking towards the future. It sounds like we could be looking at a decade down the line for this project, potentially. With so much uncertainty around this process, why is it important, do you think, to consider this issue now?
Kind of selfishly is, I'm in my last few weeks on the assembly here. I wasn't going to be around. I didn't know if there was going to be an assembly when the time was maybe a little closer that would want to pick this up and move this forward this way. So kind of selfishly, it was, for me, was because I'm here. I want to kind of start dedicating this fund for these reasons. And to be quite frank, there was a lot of people starting to eye this fund.
That's right.
And I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with any of these causes that were eyeing it. I just didn't feel, though, this fund was the appropriate one for them to look towards. I mean, one of them was childcare. And I've been trying to be very straightforward with them and telling them that I don't feel as though this is the right fund. You won't see meaningful amount of funds nearly quick enough as childcare needs. And in fact, this was kind of one of the contingencies of doing this together, was Kevin wanted to work on childcare together. And so we have been. Obviously, it's not for this election cycle, but it's something that we're working towards and are making good progress on actually right now. So I think I'm encouraged that we're trying to do something that's actually potentially going to get them more revenue and much, much quicker.
Thank you. My answer to that question is, like I said before, it's a way to leverage for future outside funding. And just the simple point is that takes years. And I know I even admitted at one of the assembly meetings where we were trying to do this, I said, I'm going against my own thing. I'm always saying, do what we can for the immediate needs right now, but try not to do a lot of new things and focus on what we have now. And I do agree with that for the most part. But this, because of the timing it takes to plan for something like this and the community outreach, and so if, think about it this way, if we didn't try to do this, who's going to want to put their time, energy, resources, money into something when you don't even know if the community wants it or not? And so that's a big part of it right there. And since Chris said something about childcare, I'll segue into that if that's okay. That's the number one thing, that in housing we've been asked about. And the childcare is, Chris and I put a letter to the editor in last night. Childcare and housing are one of the two biggest fundamental things. People want to live here, but they can't file childcare as well as housing. So, the point is, childcare, you would need at the minimum $500,000 a year to make a meaningful impact, bare minimum. And so, we're looking at two funds right now that the voters would have to vote on in October of 26 if we get this done, to decide to dedicate to this. And the child care requires a lot more money, basically, end of the day. And Chris and I are working on this, and Christensen is, and we're going to have, when Chris is out, we'll get Tim Pike in here to work on this with us. And we're kind of right at the brainstorming funding stage where we want to decide how to try to fund this. And then next, we're going to try to reach out to stakeholders and get their input. And then that's the next step, and then try to move into mechanics. And then just another thing that just came to my mind while we're doing this is this, in childcare, if we do that, it's going to have to be another new tax. But this right here is not an additional tax. It's something we're already doing right now in the tobacco tax. So there's no need, in my mind, to worry because we're not adding another tax.
Okay, well, thank you. And for those just tuning in, you're listening to Raven Radio's live ballot proposition forum. I'm here in the studio with Assembly members Kevin Mosier and Chris Yestad, sponsors of Proposition 1. Listeners, this is your chance to ask your questions. Give us a call at 747-5879 or email news at kcaw.org. I do have some questions coming up specifically about childcare. So, I think, already answered this, but this proposition really seems to have widespread support in the community, but also there are people with a lot of concerns. One community member involved in youth soccer said during a July assembly meeting that a turf field would allow local students to participate in high school soccer as well as football. Others, including some other assembly members, have said that they aren't convinced athletics and recreation is the best use for these funds. We have a question here from Rich, which gets at the issue of what these funds should be put towards. And he asks whether recreational or athletic facilities are a higher priority for hospital funds than, say, supporting childcare. He asks, did this just come out of an idea from assembly members, or is it the result of a comprehensive prioritizing of community needs? I know we touched on this, but could you go into maybe a bit more detail or touch on it again?
It's hard to say if this is a priority in the community. I'll admit when I threw this out here, I didn't have as much time as I would have liked to have gone through some of our community outreach processes, mainly like our Parks and Rec Committee. We don't have a current master plan for our Parks and Rec, so that would have been able to make that decision a little bit easier if we did have that. That is, it is a concern, and it was a concern of the entire assembly when this was at our table. I think that's fair. I would say that the spirit of this tax and this fund, this does line up. It was this tobacco tax was originally voted on to fund our hospital, the health of our community. And I would argue that athletic facilities and recreational facilities do promote that. They do promote health of the community, getting out and getting active. So I would say in the spirit of the tax and the fund of when it was first voted on by the people, I think we're there.
I was going to say I agree 100% with Chris is saying there. I believe that the spirit of this fund aligns nicely with what we're trying to do. It's really simple. This is about health, physical, emotional, social health, because these kind of things, sports and recreation, they have there's so many benefits, but they have a very unifying sense of them. That's one of the biggest things for me is I like sports. To support sports because it brings people together, it brings community together in a time when there's so much division all over the world and in the United States. It's just very, very sad. These things can help bring people together where we're not worried about what someone thinks or believes about something, but just look at each other like community members. And I think that kind of thing, when we do that, also sets an example for our youth and our children, because I think all as human nature, we forget that people are watching, our children are watching, the youth are watching. And when they see community members coming together for the good of something like that, or even in recreation and sports, people behaving properly and treating each other with respect, that says a lot. We can't control a lot of what's going outside of this community, but we can make a huge difference here. And that will reverberate. Some of these kids will go, and you don't, never know. I always call it the ripple effect. You drop that one little thing by just behaving like a decent person and having a giving heart. That can affect things and outside of the community greatly. As far as the question is recreation high priority, obviously not, like we just said. Housing, number one, childcare, number two. But I think it's not, I don't really agree that the comparison you can just say, make on its face, say, well, recreation, should be third, and so we don't do this. Like we said before, this fund is not going to make a meaningful impact on childcare or housing at all. So it is a high priority, and I don't see it hurting to do this and start saving for the future so we can start planning and leveraging this for outside money for recreation.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I know that this is a forum about the ballot propositions, but Tor Christensen in the Assembly Candidate Forum the other night said he's been working with both of you on this proposal to, what he said, quote, move the needle on the child care issue. And Kevin, you just mentioned that we might see something coming to voters in fall of 2026,
yes,
potentially.
Yes, that's our hope.
Are you able to talk any more about what you all might be working on in terms of childcare? I know this is a ballot prop forum, but
yeah.
Can you give us any hints?
I mean, I'll go first. The idea, the things we're thinking about, we met with staff and and together a couple times, but we're looking at two funding sources, or we have been looking. We're looking at the alcohol tax, adding 2% of the alcohol tax, and then the other one is to add an additional 1% sales tax in the winter, so therefore the community would effectively have 6% sales tax all year long. But the 1% in the winter months would go towards childcare. We got with staff, and that was the one that would make some of the most meaningful impact. The alcohol tax just didn't have enough. So, I think we've been hesitant to bring this forth and say that, but I know people are asking, and we are not just going to be clear, we're not just going to go put this on a ordinance and just try to, we're going to have to get community input. Like I said, our next step is to work with stakeholders. We'll be reaching out. We're trying right now to reach out so we can meet, get input on our thoughts. Chris, do you want to talk about mechanics of how this might, effectively how it would work?
Yeah, so that is kind of our next step, is trying to work on the mechanics of this and how it'll work. I think we had rough ideas of how we would like to see this work. Kind of use it somewhat similar to the state's BSA. We'll have a pot of money that we'll know what we've earned from the previous year's tax. And then we'll have our facilities basically give us probably, well, this is what we're still working on, but like a monthly headcount. And then from that, we'll be able to give funding probably monthly. And we're not 100% sure on this. Like I said, we're meeting with stakeholders. We're trying to figure out what works best for them as well. I'm sure there's lots of nuances we don't quite understand about how these facilities work. And each one of these facilities, just from my knowledge of them that we have, all work differently. They have different programs. They have a different, toddlers and infants. They have a much different teacher to or caregiver to pupil ratio than, say, preschool age. So I think there's a lot to work through on the mechanics of how this is going to work and how to be fair and equitable to each one of these facilities. And that's why we want to meet with them and really try to get this down and get everyone happy and on board with how this is going to work and how the funding's going to go. But, just from preliminary numbers that we've looked at, what the tax could bring in and what it's going to be able to do for lowering tuitions. We're hoping that it'll raise wages to attract more employees to come in, to allow more children to come into our existing facilities or potentially create new facilities. So that's kind of the idea behind it. And, it's something that we want to do right, and it's going to take a little bit of time. That's why we started working now, just trying to get this for next year's ballot. I definitely learned that putting this Prop 1 up is I didn't give myself enough time, and that was one of my biggest regrets. And I was like, oh, man, I wish I would have started this earlier. So I'm really happy that we're doing this childcare one so much earlier. And being able to take the time to do it right and get a lot more input from stakeholders in the community. So I think by the end, when this gets fully rolled out, I think it'll be a good product, and I think it'll be really good and what the community is desiring to see.
Yeah, well, thanks for talking to me about this. I know that it's such a big issue in this community, and it seems like the public is tying it to this Proposition 1. So thanks for talking to me about what might be in the works.
Yeah, we kind of knew that we were going to have to talk about it quite a bit tonight, yeah. Just because it has been so tied mm-hmm. to it. So. Yeah.
And for those just tuning in, you're listening to Raven Radio's live ballot proposition forum. I'm here in the studio with Assembly members Kevin Mosier and Chris Ustad, sponsors of Proposition 1. Listeners, this is your chance to ask your questions. Give us a call at 747-5879 or email us at news@kcaw.org. So back to Proposition 1. Why not just sunset the tax?
That was one of the options that was given to the Assembly when this was presented a year and a half ago to us originally.
Yeah, about something like that.
And that was something that the Assembly, we didn't really want to see it go into the general fund, and we also didn't want to see it just sunsetted. I think it's hard to create a tax. You know, I think us as citizens and Sitka in general, you know, we don't like new taxes, and I can't say I blame anyone. I'm kind of the same way, honestly. And so it's easier to keep a tax going once it's already in place than it is to try to create a new one. So I think that was kind of it. And like I was saying, that, you know, this athletic and recreational facilities, it kind of met the spirit of what this tax was originally for. So it just... It felt like a right fit to me, at least. Whether that does to the rest of the community, I guess we'll find out in a few weeks.
Right.
And another quick question from a listener. Why not save it to allocate to address important issues as they come up?
Well, I think I would go back to the fact that this fund, like, as it is unpredictable, it's not going to, the reason for this is it's going to have a meaningful impact over time. But I don't think, you know, we can have something with this where if it passes, we can just throw out a couple hundred thousand for this or this issue. Usually bigger issues take a lot more resources, a tremendous amount. And so, and just to bring it in perspective again, this fund is not what it's going to do, but that's not what's going to help with those things.
Okay, well, thank you. And we've been talking for a while on this now. So lastly, just why should Sitkins vote yes on Prop 1? Or should they?
No, that's
yes, on this proposition.
I think doing it would send a very clear and strong message, and hopefully with a strong turnout in the favor, to outside entities that we are invested in the physical and emotional welfare of our residents. I don't know if it'll happen, but there's have been talk and at the state level of government obligation bonds that could go out, and I could foresee something where if they do that, we could put in a request, because someone I talked to said ask for the sky and then you'll get what you want. We could ask for a lot of money from something like that to help with housing. And then we could add a little bit of that to this. Basically, it's a tool to get more funds from without this tax. You know, grants, federal, state grants, and possibly outside donations.
I guess for me, I've always kind of tied, you know, recreation and athletic facilities and how those good those facilities are and recreation capabilities that a community has kind of to the health and well-being of the community. And I'm not saying like health, but I mean like how well the community is doing as a whole financially, I guess just holistically. It always seems to reflect, you know, coming into I'll use Ketchikan as an example here. My son played on All-Stars, and we went to Ketchikan, and I was just blown away by how phenomenal their facilities were. really nice turf fields, dugouts. I mean, just the stands, everything. I was just blown away by it. And it just, it really kind of gives you a sense that, like, man, Ketchikan, they're doing well. You know, they've invested in their youth. They've invested in themselves. So I just really kind of tie how good these facilities are, whether it be for athletics or, you know, just even our trail systems that we have here. You know, you have nice recreation capabilities and facilities. It just really, I think it really reflects the community and its overall well-being. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of, I feel like we're doing well, so I kind of, you know, kick it down to those facilities and let's show us and the outside world that we are doing well. This is a community that I feel is healthy overall. So, I guess I kind of wanted to reflect that.
Yeah. You mind if I add one more thing?
Yeah, go
too?
For it.
One thing that we didn't mention, I think we've just said it a lot, so we forget that we've, you know, haven't said it here, but doing this kind of thing, supporting it, is a draw for people to live, either to come to Sitka or stay in Sitka. You know, there's people that come here and they love it and they want to live here, but then, like we said before, they can't find a place to live, they can't find childcare for their children. This, when you have these kind of things and the community strongly supports it, it's a very big draw for people to come to Sitka, and more importantly, for people who are already here to stay. If there's young people maybe wanting to start a family, do I want to do this? Or want to take the leap and leave Sitka, or do I want to stay here and invest in this community? So this helps with that.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me. Again, listeners, you've been listening to our ballot proposition forum here on KCAW. I'm reporter Hope McKenney, and we just heard from Assembly members Kevin Mosier and Chrissy Stad, sponsors of Ballot Proposition 1. Thank you both for joining me. And also thank you to everyone who submitted questions. That concludes our ballot prop forum here on Raven Radio. If you missed tonight's forum or would like to listen to our forums with Assembly and school board candidates from earlier this week, you can head to our election hub at kcaw.org. There you can also find interviews with candidates, candidate questionnaires, and a sample ballot for the October 7th municipal election. Thanks so much again for listening. Up next is Sunset Symphony. Hope you have a great night.